Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello and welcome to Stories from the Bunker, the weekly podcast where we discuss the weird and the wonderful, the strange and the supernatural. With me, Robin, today, as always, are Alex.
Hello there, Robin. How's it going? It's been a long time since we've all been here together.
Reunited, the Trinity. But not that Trinity.
Yeah.
No. But, you know, the other one. Because our third member is Martin.
Hello.
How's everyone? Indeed. Fine, thank you. We've all been on alternating on holiday.
Yeah. It's nice to have the original gang back together. Although, thank you very much to both Steph and Georgia who were on our last two podcasts.
Both of them really, really great. Really enjoyed listening to Georgia's ideas, and of course Steph was great company as well. But today we're talking about some more, I know, conspiratorial things now that we've got the three of us back together.
I found a really strange case that I wanted to look into. With a man who was really interested in Arthur Conan Doyle, the famed writer of the Sherlock Holmes novels.
Yeah.
And he died in a way that's not too dissimilar to a Sherlock Holmes mystery. Mm. So I wanted to look into that case.
Okay.
But what else are we going to be looking at today?
So I've got a news piece about a Iraqi refugee. It's a good story. Mm. Who thought all of his family had died 30 years ago at the end of the first Gulf War.
Wow.
Was brought over to the UK, and there's a twist in the tale 30 years on. So we'll be going into that.
All right.
And
that sounds very intriguing.
Yeah.
I like there's two big mysteries.
It's quite an obvious twist, really, but with that description. But there we go. Yeah.
Okay. Well, and of course, I've prepared a quiz, the weekly quiz, it's rematch time. Last time.
A bit of a grudge match. I was robbed last time.
You were robbed.
There was a comment that said Alex was robbed, and I totally agree.
or maybe Rob was Alex'd. Ever thought about that?
Happens to me all the time.
Maybe, fine.
Yeah.
Good wit there.
Martin versus Alex. Martin's the reigning champion. Will Alex claim his crown back?
Martin's the reigning...
As we know.
I won like every single quiz this year.
Champion.
As soon as you lose one, you've lost them all.
You know what they say, you're only as good as your last quiz.
That's a common saying over here in the UK.
Fair enough.
But let's begin with Alex's tale from the bunker.
So this is the mysterious case of Llansillyn Green. So Richard Llansillyn Green was a British scholar who was seen as a leading expert on Arthur Conan Doyle, the famed creator of Sherlock Holmes. Mm. But when he was found lying dead in his Kensington flat in 2004, it sparked a mystery that perhaps only the iconic detective himself could have solved.
Ooh.
Like that?
Yeah. I like it already. Yeah. I like it already.
He'll never be able to prove it because he's a fictional character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, we're going to attempt to solve it now. Proving that we're as good as Sherlock Holmes.
Armchair detectives.
Or better.
The best kind.
Possibly. So on March 27th, 2004, the body was discovered lying face down on his bed. It appeared on inspection he had been garrotted with a shoelace that had been tightened by a wooden spoon, which obviously immediately pointed to the fact that he was murdered.
Garrotted, is that?
Yeah.
Tied on ligature, kind of.
So the shoelace. Yeah.
He's moved it and twisted the spoon over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's cut off the blood supply. Boom.
You got it.
Gone.
Gosh.
Which obviously, you know, points to a murder, because who would kill themselves that way? Strange. But what made this incident all the more suspicious was that in the weeks leading up to his death, Richard had found himself wrapped up in a mysterious set of circumstances involving the auction and rightful inheritance of a large collection of Arthur Conan Doyle's private files.
Ooh.
Was Richard Llansillyn Green murdered? Well, gentlemen, the game's afoot. And the hunt for the murderer is on. But that's the last Sherlock Holmes reference I'm going to do.
Oh, that's a shame.
It's a shame, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a real person, and he was, you know, he died. Yeah. So,
what was his first name again?
Richard.
Richard Llansillyn Green.
When was this?
In 2004.
Oh, that's quite recent.
Yeah,
sorry, I didn't catch that.
Quite a recent case.
Kensington as well. That's not far from where we are.
Not far, no.
Yeah.
What line is it?
district
line?
Yeah.
Kensington.
20, 30 minutes?
20, 30 minutes away.
Depends where you want to go.
Our addresses.
So before we get even deeper into the case, just a bit of backstory. So Richard Lancelin Green was born in Cheshire in the northwest of England in 1953. Oh. And from the age of 7, he began collecting memorabilia relating to anything Sherlock Holmes.
Oh,
so he's been passionate about this for his whole life.
That's awesome.
And at the time of his death, he undoubtedly resided over the largest private collection of Conan Doyle memorabilia in the world. That included first edition books, film artifacts, and even a recreation of the Baker Street study in his attic.
Holy cow.
That's mad.
That's amazing.
It was actually probably the largest private collection that will ever exist as well.
Oh.
Because when he died, he left it all to a museum in Portsmouth, I think.
Oh, I did not know about this museum.
So it's, yeah, it like is was the largest yeah. private collection that will ever exist.
Oh, I've got to see this. Sad he died, obviously, but
He was also he was also co-editor on the first comprehensive bibliography of Arthur Conan Doyle and served as chairman of the Sherlock Holmes Society in the late 1990s. So his expertise on this subject cannot be overstated, basically.
Well established.
However, in May 2004, it was announced that the Christie Auction House would sell off the Conan Doyle collection, a large collection of over 3,000 documents of the author's private correspondence. Mm. So these were letters to loads of really famous people like Winston Churchill, presidents in the US, that kind of thing. And Richard Green was apparently outraged by this, as he believed these letters should actually belong to the British Library, as opposed to being sold off to American bidders.
Mm. Oh, wow, this Indiana Jones style belongs in a museum.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. However, the collection belonged to the widow of Doyle's son, Adrian. But according to Green, they should have in fact been bequeathed to his daughter, Green's long-term friend, Dame Jean, who had instructed all of her own memorabilia be handed over to the British Library. So it's basically a question of he believed that Arthur Conan Doyle's daughter should own these documents, whereas actually it was the son who owned it. And the widow was now selling it in this auction. And Green tried in vain to prove the issue, but ultimately failed to produce any evidence to the contrary that they actually belonged to her.
Right. I don't know what the law specifies in those cases, because
I think
why would the daughter get it over the son? Yes.
I think in this case as well, because Arthur Conan Doyle left certain things to certain children.
Yeah.
He believed that not all of the documents. They were all Adrian's. He believed that some of them had been stolen and that they actually belonged to her.
All right.
But again, he had no way of proving it.
Mm.
So he was reportedly deeply distressed at the auction, which would have endangered his biography that he was writing. And that led those investigating the case to believe that he might have taken his own life. So he was working on a volume of Arthur Conan Doyle's life. And basically, because these were being sold, they might have disappeared over to America and never been seen again,
right.
or held in private ownership.
Yeah.
And it's thought that he felt so strongly about that.
Wow.
I mean, you can't deny how strong he felt about Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah,
so
of course, yeah.
Possibly.
Wow, okay.
However, a confusing counter theory to the suicide came up in light after Green's sister, Priscilla West, described her brother's concerns leading up to his death.
Mm.
So, in numerous conversations with West, it was reported at the time that Green claimed he was being followed by an American and that his house was bugged. His sister noted that her brother had become extremely erratic and he was displaying paranoid and delusional behavior, hence her decision to go to his apartment the morning after his death. So she went over the day after he died to check on him because she was that concerned about him.
Oh dear, that must have been an unpleasant discovery.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But there is also that matter of the method of like the way that he's killed himself or been murdered.
Mm.
It would have been an unusual way to end one's life. Not impossible, but...
Yeah, I mean, you could...
It would have been unusual.
The way it was done, you could easily wrap a shoelace around your own throat and then tighten it with a spoon, was it? But most people... Well, I say most people. the common methods of suicide.
Sounds a bit bizarre.
It was ruled like it would have been incredibly painful as well.
Not
just strangulation, it's with the shoelace. So it would have been like cutting into
you. Well, if you've ever wrapped an elastic band around your finger one too many times, playing with it, you can see how painful that can be. let alone a shoelace and a spoon.
Also, what was strange was if it was suicide, there's the fact that he never left a note or any kind of explanation.
Mm.
And it's noted that, at the very least, even if he was deeply distressed, he was an extremely organized person who had close bonds with his family. Like, his sister came to check on him the next day. It's odd that he wouldn't leave any kind of note if it was a suicide.
Yeah.
Or any kind of explanation. And obviously it's not known that there was no previous record of him suffering from any mental health problems. Right.
If he's 51 when he died and he's had a lifetime of mental stability, it's a bit odd for him to suddenly do that.
Yeah. Another strange detail that raised concerns was the fact that his voicemail message on his machine had been changed and replaced by an American voice.
What?
And strange. Well, it sounds strange. The explanation actually isn't that strange.
So the default message.
Is that it was it's an American-made machine.
Oh.
And so the default message was American. But that's what initially prompted the police to investigate this as a potential murder.
Well, maybe not even the fact that it's an American voice, but the fact that it's been changed could be someone wiping the machine, potentially.
Well, exactly, yeah. Also, shortly before his death, he gave his sister a piece of paper containing the names of three people and their telephone numbers and told her to keep them safe.
Okay.
Very strange.
Right. Mm.
Unfortunately, we don't know who these three people were.
Oh.
There was never reported, so I don't know what happened there.
Sister kept them very safe.
Yeah. Well, yeah, seems to. However, despite these bits of evidence, there were no signs of forced entry, and there was a near empty bottle of gin beside the bed after a large consumption of wine with his evening meal. Both pointed to the possibility that he was heavily intoxicated on the evening in question. So he dined with his ex-boyfriend, like this same night.
Right.
And apparently his ex-boyfriend said that he wasn't behaving particularly strangely, or wasn't that emotional. He had a lot of wine to drink with dinner,
mm-hmm.
but then he went home and drank loads of gin.
So the ex-boyfriend was with him?
He wasn't with him when he went back to his.
Yeah, of course, but they'd met up that evening.
They'd met up that evening for dinner, and apparently they went back to his for coffee. Mm. But then,
Okay.
Ah, see, that's even more confusing, because you could argue that he was either so drunk he was able to garrote himself in that kind of like drunken depression and you don't notice the pain so much, or you're just drunk so you do it because you're determined. Mm. Or he was so drunk he couldn't possibly have killed himself because he would have been incapable of... I mean, tying a shoelace when you're drunk to a spoon isn't easy. Not that I tried it. But
no, I imagine, imagine it wouldn't be.
Yeah. And also there's the fact that, like, it seems kind of... I mean, obviously people react differently in this situation if they're suicidal. But it seems kind of odd that he was happy to go out with his friend, have a, nice dinner, drink loads of wine, and then just go back for coffee, and then just kill yourself.
I mean,
it seems kind of unusual.
There is, of course, him being so madly into the Sherlock Holmes memorabilia and what was going on with these artifacts. But at the same time, surely a more personal reason after meeting up with the ex-boyfriend probably be a more likely explanation?
I mean, the thing is...
The proximity to the death?
He's an ex-boyfriend, but they apparently saw each other for 2 years, but then were friends for like 6 years after that. So they're just kind of friends.
Friends at this point.
No information came out about what was said or discussed on that particular evening, I take it.
Yeah.
Nothing, it's pretty quite- obviously nothing. The boyfriend said that there was nothing out of the ordinary, suicide or anything like that.
Yeah.
He testified saying that he didn't coerce him into it or anything.
No. Yeah. I was more meaning if he'd said something even as simple as that they shouldn't see each other anymore or something like that, then...
Oh.
I mean, it could be something highly personal that we're not savvy to.
Yeah.
Possibly.
But then, like I say, if they've been friends for 6 years after being in a relationship for 2 years.
Mm.
Probably all right. Probably just had a nice evening together.
Mm. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, before he died, Mr. Green did make several telephone calls to friends and journalists claiming that an American was pursuing him. He feared that his opposition to the forthcoming auction could result in his death, and his behaviour is said to have become increasingly erratic. Although the American wasn't officially named, there was speculation among Holmes enthusiasts that Mr. Lancelin Green had become increasingly paranoid about a man named John Lellenberg. That's okay. John Lellenberg, who was a policy strategist analyst in the office of Donald Rumsfeld, then U.S. Defense Secretary, sorry. Mm. John Lellenberg was also a respected author of books about Sherlock Holmes. Mm. On the day that he was found dead, he was also in London to see the Sherlock Holmes Society that week. So that's pretty odd timing, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it could be people speculating after the fact that he had died and said who would have been an American who was in London at the time. So
possibly, yeah.
So it might have been an afterthought, perhaps. But
we're still suggesting that this Lellenberg person, who's in the office of the US Secretary of Defense,
yep,
may have murdered.
Well, I mean, this is it, right? There's no evidence that puts him in the flat at the time. There was no forced entry. Nothing, no fingerprints left by him.
Mm.
There's no reason to suspect him.
Yeah.
But this seems to be like he was warning about an American who's been following him. And apparently the two men had collaborated before in a number of Holmesian articles, but fell out in the mid-1990s over Lancelin Green's close relationship with Dame Jean, the daughter of Arthur Conan Doyle. So there was some disagreement there.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what it was relating to. But when he was questioned about this, John Lellenberg, obviously he denied any involvement and even claims that he had a good conversation with him the year before. And apparently they were, friendly. And there was
so he wouldn't have to force his way into the flat. Yeah. They were friendly. Knock on the door, let him in.
Possibly, but...
Drunk on gin and wine.
But it was Lancelin...
Hey, Dan, come on in.
Possibly, but it was Lancelin Green who was the one that was telling people he was concerned about being followed by an American.
True. Yeah.
But from his perspective, there wasn't any beef to begin with. He was so confused, the fact that he had been linked with this.
It sounds unlikely, to me anyway. Initial impressions.
Yeah.
So were you leaning towards a suicide?
I think so. Mm. I think so, just because of the mental state that he seems to be in as well.
Uh-huh.
You're thinking people are following you. And did you said he mentioned the three people?
A list of three people that he gave
it's
to just, his sister.
It's odd behaviour, isn't it? Mm,
it is odd behaviour. But because of the evidence on both sides... The coroner eventually returned an open verdict for the case, saying that there was no concrete evidence of foul play, but also insufficient evidence to adequately rule a suicide.
Mm.
There wasn't, a clear motive for him killing himself. It was an odd way to commit suicide. He didn't leave any note. The behaviour is odd for committing suicide.
That's the thing, though, isn't it? The way he did it is just so bizarre.
Mm.
It's like, I mean, has that been replicated in any famous literature or novels? That'd be interesting to know.
That is an excellent point to bring up, because the police then appealed to Holmes experts and they said they thought maybe he's trying to recreate something Sherlock Holmes.
Mm.
Does this resemble anything from Sherlock Holmes? And the only close case that was mildly reminiscent to this was the Sherlock Holmes mystery, The Problem of Thor Bridge.
Mm.
You don't know if either of you are familiar with that. But the story involves a woman who commits suicide in order to frame another woman who has been flirting with her husband.
Mm.
So she's on a bridge and she's tied a rock to a gun and then she fires it at herself and then the rock falls over, drags the gun off the bridge, so it sinks down to the bottom of the river, and then she's got the gun, the other gun, planted it on the woman's in the woman's wardrobe or whatever.
Oh, I see.
So Holmes detects it because he notices a chunk has been taken out of the edge of the bridge.
Oh, is that right?
Where the pistol you do know this one. Yeah, I do. Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah,
but then that's
spoilers.
I know it's fictional, but that's a plausible way to commit suicide and frame somebody for murder. Garrotting yourself is still a lot harder.
Hmm.
But I would assume.
There is another point that they made, which is if a murderer had come in and garrotted him, why would he need the spoon to use? Like, it makes sense if he's garrotting himself.
That's a good point.
He needs the spoon to help, like, twist it and keep the pressure on.
True.
Whereas a murderer would just use their hands.
I guess to make it look like a suicide.
Well, there's that. Possibly. As well. Yeah.
Maybe.
Either way, it remains a kind of open, unsolved case.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Mysterious.
Yeah.
But there is a sad, tragic end to the story.
Oh.
Which is that the auction, in the end, didn't fetch a huge amount of money, but also most of the important documents ended up going to the British Library. So if he did commit suicide because of not being able to finish his biography, then he didn't need to because the biography would have been fine in the end.
Yeah.
Unless, do we know why those documents went to the British Library? Did the British Library buy them? Or did somebody bequeath them? And if they did, maybe they were inspired by his death.
Possibly. Mm, I'm not sure why they ended up going there, but
Oh.
But yeah, it's an interesting one.
It is. Yeah. It's interesting and sad in many ways.
Mm.
I mean, have you ever, going on a dark tangent, have you ever contemplated, like, how you'd commit suicide to frame somebody for your murder?
I can't say no. Okay. Have you?
All right.
It sounds like you have. Go on.
Well, you know, maybe it's because I read Sherlock Holmes as a child. Yeah, I've thought about it. It'd be fun.
Yeah. Dagger in the back, can't slumped think of over the desk in the library.
Yeah, it's hard to stab yourself in the back, though. Yeah. The problem is finding a foolproof way that doesn't give away the fact that it's suicide.
Mm.
It's getting harder.
Got to have a think.
Police forensics is getting better and better.
Well, yeah. I mean, with the gun, there'd just be the residue from that particular gun. And
in fact, you'd be better at it, I think.
Would I?
Yeah, given your legal expertise compared to the rest of us, you probably have a bit more
legal expertise.
And when it comes to police detection, you'd be able to,
That's right. I'll have a think. Have a think and get back to you. Don't have anything in mind
next
at
week,
the moment.
Martin found dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Did he commit suicide?
Who did he frame? Yeah.
I'll just tell the commenters, if anything happens to me next week, blame one of these two.
Yep.
It was one of them that did it.
Little do you know, I'm planting the seeds in this video evidence right now.
although they're framing someone for the suicide, aren't they? So it'd be you having to... Actually, it'd be me dead and you'd be blamed.
Yeah.
Yep, that way around, wouldn't it? Well, unless if anything happens to you, then it's your own fault because you've killed yourself and tried to blame someone else based on this conversation.
Fair enough.
Twist is, I killed Alex and then framed you for your own murder and then we're all dead.
I kind of want to get killed after this conversation. Okay. Anyway, that was my story of the week.
Intriguing. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of, I guess you're on one side or the other, aren't you?
Like, yeah.
Do you think he committed suicide?
I think probably yes. I think because of his obsession almost with Sherlock Holmes, and I just think that he wanted to have a kind of he was probably feeling suicidal, but thought it would be better or like send a better message than leaving a note to then make it look like a Sherlock Holmes murder case almost.
I also think yes. I think that from the information we have, he's clearly in a very, very fragile mental state.
Mm.
But I do have, it always leaves question marks when someone uses such an obscure method.
Yeah.
It's really weird. I've never heard of anyone doing that before.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Robin?
I think, now that you've explained it, it does make more sense that he committed suicide in some bizarre way. To try to frame somebody or just to kind of make it interesting for himself, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, because he was such an obsessive and clearly, like you say, not in a great state of mind at the time of his death, but also clearly an intellectual man. Maybe he just thought, if I'm going to commit suicide, I want to make it at least interesting.
Possibly.
You're not just going to hang myself with my tie or shoot myself. Everybody's tried that.
Everyone's tried that.
But then it's you'd have to be in a particularly weird and fixated state of mind to, you know, sow the seeds to lay suspicion on somebody else the way he did. Like, there's so much forethought into the suicide. That alone makes it really unusual.
Yeah, he would have had to plan out for quite a while.
Yeah, some time. Mm. Really hard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But we're talking about it. I mean, maybe that was part of it. For it to be spoken about, because it is so unusual and it is a mysterious case. And it involves a person who's obsessed with crime and Sherlock Holmes. So, an interesting one.
What do you guys think? Do you think Lance Lingreen was murdered, or do you think he committed suicide in a way that made it seem like a Sherlock Holmes case? Let us know in the comments below.
Or via our Twitter feed, or by emailing us at alltimeconspiracies@gmail.com.
Indeed.
Mm. Yeah. Speaking of comments, what have our viewers been saying in the YouTube comments this week?
Oh, they've been saying the nicest things.
The nicest things. Yeah. They're all such a lovely bunch.
I loved this comment on the last podcast.
Oh, yeah?
From MJ, who says, Robin is probably out getting another software update. Hashtag robot Robin. How was your software update, Robin?
It was very efficacious.
Classic.
I did see that comment, and I was so tempted to reply.
Binary.
I've got to say, I'm loving this this hashtag, so let's keep it going.
Robo Robin.
Yeah, that's great. Brian Jenkins says, how about Rendlesham Forest? I don't know how easy it would be to visit the site, but if possible, you can investigate the claims that the witnesses simply saw an old lighthouse.
Is this the in plain sight?
I'm presuming so. Like, he's suggesting, why don't we go there, which is a great suggestion.
It is a great suggestion. It's on our list, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of the ones we've definitely thought about, and we've covered it before as well, haven't we?
Yeah, videos on the channel that are talking about it. It would be nice to actually go nice to the scene of the crime.
It would be good. I'm not sure entirely what there is in terms of things to see other than the site itself, but perhaps we can map it out and say, oh, how likely would it be for the lights to be seen where we are if we went there at night or whatever.
I think that's probably what he's referring to with the lighthouse, because theoretically, because that's what they said that it was, the lights from the lighthouse.
The orange glows,
So if we went there, it would be, presumably you'd still see the Rendlesham lights there today.
Yeah.
It'll be tricky though, because obviously there's the US Air Base, which might throw some spanner in the works of us getting close. But
of course,
we'll see.
Mm. Or maybe get in touch. Yeah.
That's part of the challenge.
One of us has to enlist.
Play the long game.
Play the long game.
Yep.
Okay. So Sheena Evans says, "I always feel so relaxed when I listen to your videos. You have the most wonderful, calming voices. It's so refreshing because so many podcasts are people being loud and fooling around. I wish I had found you sooner because I so look forward to your articles. And yes, I have binged. Oh. Much love to you all," which was just the nicest comment of the week, I think.
Lovely comment.
Really kind.
Thanks very much.
I'm sure we can be loud and obnoxious at times too, but thank you.
As you can tell, we're fairly low energy people.
And finally, Leash B, who always comments on
the show.
She says, if you go back in time, so this was referring to the time travel discussion last week.
Yeah.
If you go back in time, invest in Google, Apple, Samsung, Gold, Facebook, Instagram, and please tell my ancestors to not bother procreating. My life is a waste.
Oh, God.
I really hope it was a joke. If it's a joke, then that was incredibly funny. But if it wasn't, then
it's dark.
Wouldn't do that.
But yeah.
But then if we did, you'd never know.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that wasn't the issue with the comment. I hope that you were joking, because,
yes to the first bit, no to the second.
Exactly.
So, there you go.
But that's my comments for the week. It's kind of a weird one to end on, isn't it?
Well, I hope you're all right, Leash. We appreciate you. Your life has value to us.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we're grateful to your grandparents for procreating your parents.
This has turned weird.
Yeah, just don't get down that route. No one wants to hear about that. But anyway, thank you.
What if we travel back in time and Martin turned out to be Leisha's grandparent?
What are you talking about?
It's like the grandfather paradox, except it's not.
The grandfather paradox.
You're not sporting yourself.
No.
You're sporting somebody else.
Indeed.
This has gone down
a strange conversation.
Weird conversation. But I like it. Let's keep going.
Time travel. Because
then it would make sense why Leash was such a fan of the podcast, because she, relates to Martin.
Her granddad. So
there we go.
This
is really strange. Can we just... Yeah. Shall we just move on to the new story? What do you guys reckon?
I'm really sorry for dragging you into this leash.
That's all right, we'll edit that out.
Okay. Shall we go into my new story?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a story about a refugee who came over to Britain at the end of the first Gulf War. So I think it was in 1992, I think, he came over to the UK. And basically, his name is Amar Khanim, and he was very famous back then because he was a boy, as I said, came into the UK because his family all died during a napalm strike conducted by Saddam Hussein on this particular group of Sunni Muslims at the time. So, pretty horrible stuff. Mm. So he came over to the UK. He was set up with a family, family of an MP, in a little small village in Devon. Mm. So, for those who don't know, Devon is it's quite a rural county in general. I mean, it has cities like Exeter, which are a little bit bigger, but in general, like there's lots of villages, there's lots of coast there. Mm. It's a nice place to grow up. But of course, very different from Amar's hometown.
Yeah, very different. It'll be not many Muslims to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In fact, I'm pretty sure that everyone back in the early 90s in Devon, as probably there still are now, roughly, was basically white and fairly. There are some rural areas that aren't so well off, but fairly middle class, a lot of the villages, especially where this MP was living.
Yeah.
So the politician was called Emma Nicholson, and she came across him when visiting a hospital in Iraq.
Oh, right.
Okay. And so she found out about his story, took pity, and of course ended up adopting him. So he basically stayed in Devon and around Exeter for the whole of his life up until the present day. But a few years back, a woman on Iraq appeared on Iraqi television in the background of a report holding up a poster of what looked like Amar as a child. Was saying, "My son has been lost for this many years. I know that he's out there. I'm still trying to find him to this day."
Oh, no.
So his mum had survived the napalm attack when he thought the whole family were dead.
Oh, wow.
And was looking for him. So Amar got word of this and then spent the next while trying to find his mother. And so this basically proceeded to kind of into a crescendo when they finally met last year. And so it's a really, really good news story about them meeting up after all of this time.
Yeah.
And so Amar's been back. He's seen his mother after all of these years. And now he wants to come back to, he's back in the UK, but he wants to then bring his adopted mum, Emma Nicholson, to meet with his original mum. So it's just a lovely, lovely story. I think really often in the world and what we discuss on the podcast is so, so dark, but I thought this was one worth mentioning just because of how positive it is.
Not to sound too skeptical, but my first thought is, have they proven beyond doubt that they are related? Have they done a DNA test?
They have indeed. They've had cheek swabs, and they are they show a 99.9999999% match.
Great.
You know how they say.
That's really great.
They are related.
I hope they get along.
Yeah,
I hope it's not awkward.
From the pictures I've seen, it looks like they have done.
It's one of those things that could go, like, it could be an awkward dynamic, I guess, going from especially maybe for the adopted mom to now have feelings of kind of almost guilt, like you took him away.
I mean
it was more from the article I've seen and the news reports, it seems more like a fostering situation.
Yeah,
because the MP Emma Nicholson moved back up to London, and their contact between the two of them kind of broke down a little bit in terms of communication. And unfortunately, her husband, Michael Caine, not the Michael Caine, different one, unfortunately died quite a few years back. And so kind of that bond broke down a little bit in terms of the kind of mother and son, adopted parents.
Oh, so her husband was being more of a dad while she was working in London.
From the sounds of it. Right. And then she moved back up to London full time. And so the relationship, kind of the communication broke down. He was fine living as an adult. In Exeter, I believe. Mm. And so now he wants to bring
story.
The original mother, his original biological mother, back together. with the person who brought him over to the UK. So
it's a great story.
Happy story. Yeah. And it's been covered on BBC Panorama. So I don't know if, I know it's probably a little bit difficult to get access to in the US.
It might be on BBC America.
Yeah. But if you can see it, I'm definitely going to watch it in the next couple of days to see the full insight, the full story. But yeah, it just reminded me of like the programs of long lost family and reuniting people.
Yeah.
But a very, very public version of this, because it was front page news back in the early 90s.
Mm.
So, incredible. A great story where usually there's so much sadness.
Does it, like Alex was hinting, put you off adopting refugee children in the future just in case, you know, their parents are alive and you're stealing them?
I mean, I couldn't adopt anyone. Like, I can barely take care of myself, let alone another human being.
I think if I was in the position to adopt, I don't think it can't put you off, surely.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I don't think he would regret being taken out of that situation. I mean, maybe he would have found his mother a lot sooner. But the fact is, they were separated because he had horrific injuries. I'm sure she was injured in the attack too.
I mean, she was dead.
Yeah, she was dead. I mean, and maybe if he had stayed around the area, he might not have lived as long as he has now. If he'd been put back into effectively a war zone.
It's true. So you're saying ethically, though, you should always act within the limits of your own knowledge regarding a particular situation where someone needs help.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
I think in terms of making sure you have all the knowledge you can have.
Someone there needs help. The best way to help this child is to adopt them and bring them to the UK from the Middle East.
If that is the best way,
I can't risk the possibility that their family might actually be alive and looking for them.
If you thought their family was alive, surely you'd reunite them. But the doctors in the hospital, and as far as I can tell, most people surrounding the situation, the story, everyone was told that they were dead.
Mm.
And so there wasn't any reason to think that they were alive.
Yeah, it'd be pretty messed up if she was like, yeah, I want to adopt you, but there's a 0.5% chance that your family could have survived. So I'm not going to.
Yeah, it seemed unimaginable that was the case.
Yeah.
Like they had, for all intents and purposes, died in this attack. Of course, if you're taking someone away from their family just because you think they'll have a better life, that's a different story, right?
Yeah. I can't think of anyone famous who's done that.
No, none at all. No singers or pop stars.
No actors, nothing.
Yeah.
Even then, of course, they're helping these people, so it's maybe for the best that they're doing that kind of thing. That was really fascinating. Shall we move on to something even more lighthearted with the quiz?
Yeah. Grudge match.
Let's do
this. All right, quiz time, gentlemen. Mm. Sound off with your buzzers. Martin. What you got? Bugs Bunny.
Bugs Bunny.
Love Bugs Bunny. And Alex?
I've come for a different approach.
Ooh, you're hard. Showing off.
Bit of David Brent.
From The Office UK, those who have only seen the US version.
Question one, what version of The Office is the best?
And so, on to the real question one. Good, easy one to get you into the groove.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Merton, Lewisham, and Lambeth.
I can press it. It didn't work.
Earl Burroughs.
I pressed it like 5 times.
No. Alex?
I was thinking of something. Greenwich? Wait. What was the question?
Oh, you buzzed before I finished the question. So I shall finish the question and Martin can answer.
Oh, no.
Merton, Lewisham and Lambeth are all boroughs of which city?
Oh, my God.
London.
London is the correct answer.
London.
Well done, Martin. Well, that was a chaotic start.
I'm just going to show my buzzer works now. One sec.
I want to do over. It's not a good start. It's fine. It's fine.
As soon as you said Lambeth, I was like,
question two.
1-0. To Martin. Question two. Okay.
Brilliant start.
And forgive me for the pronunciation of this, but what do the Oshia do? I'll give you a clue. They are on Tokyo public transport.
Yes, do they push people into the trains to get them on?
They do. They are the people whose job it is to shove other people into the trains.
Those videos, if anyone hasn't so seen this, they're like businessmen with briefcases just standing by the outside the train, and someone just runs up and just barges them skittles them into other people.
It's really effective, though. I'm always impressed at how many people they managed to squeeze onto the trains.
Like, imagine if someone fainted, or imagine if someone was sick.
Yeah.
Or if you just didn't want to get on the train at that point and you were just hurdled into it.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I haven't been to Tokyo, because I don't want to get shoved into a train.
Just don't go on the trains.
That's true. You can still visit the city. It's going to be fairly dangerous. And how the hell do you get off if you're stuck in the middle of that?
Yeah.
Mm.
Maybe people get off and move.
Presumably there must be a long enough gap for people to get off before they start shoving people on, right?
Well, yeah, but everyone must have to get off if there's someone right in the center. Anyway. Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Anyway. Okay. Let's go
to Tokyo and find out.
2-0 to Martin.
It's not a good start.
It's a good start.
Yes, it is.
Question 3. What do Haagen-Dazs, Dolmio, Berghaus, Superdry, and Matsui have in common?
Who buzzed first?
I think I heard first. All right,
fine.
But, you know.
Whatever.
Have in common?
Yeah.
They are
good, because I don't know this question.
British manufacturers.
Alex, I'll give you a guess.
They were all founded in Britain.
You're both half right. So,
British CEOs.
No. They're all foreign sounding brands, but they're from the UK or the US. You're not wrong, but you also weren't right.
I was thinking Superdry.
It's a pretty obscure answer.
I'll give you both a point.
Okay.
For that one. So it's 3-1 to Martin still.
Fine.
Question 4. What might have formed from the Thayer impact? That was Alex.
The moon.
Yes. Yeah, well done.
I was thinking of my impacts.
I don't know why it's called the Thayer impact. I didn't look it up. I guess it's, I don't know why they chose the name Thayer. Just the name. If anyone knows, please let us know in the comments or on Twitter. Yeah.
One of the first impacts was just the A impact.
Question 5. 3-2. Oh, Alex is catching up.
Close.
Who is the current Duke of Lancaster?
I don't know my dukes.
Okay, let's just guess. What's up, Doc? Is it Prince Andrew?
No.
I was going to say Prince Andrew.
I mean, you're correct. I mean, it's a member of the royal family.
Ooh, you're odd.
Is it Edward?
No, I'll give you both one more guess.
What's up, Doc? Is it Prince Harry?
No. Alex?
Ooh, you're odd.
William?
No.
Okay.
I understand why I didn't get this, because it's a bit of a trick question. The answer is the Queen.
Okay.
What was the question again?
Who is the current Duke of Lancaster?
Duke. Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the trick. The monarch, regardless of their gender, is always Duke.
Duke
of Lancaster.
There we go. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Question number 6. Still 3-2 to Martin.
Blimey.
What connects avocado and orchid?
Avocado and orchids.
Yeah.
Ooh, you're odd. Showing off.
Are they both found from? Do they both originate in the same country of origin? Same country of origin.
No, that's not the connection I'm looking for.
Okay.
What's up, Doc?
Are they both seeds?
No. I'll give you a clue. The connection is in the names.
Ooh, you're odd. Showing off.
I've buzzed in, but it's wrong. I've figured out that it's wrong immediately.
Oh, yeah?
So, I don't know. Can I just take back my buzzer?
No,
I was going to
guess.
In their names. Are they... no, there's nothing. There's nothing. I was going to say, are they anagrams of each other? But they're not in any way.
I mean, they could be in certain languages, but not in ours. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Okay, that's, Martin. Yeah. Do you have a guess?
Avocado, orchid.
Yeah.
Avocado, orchid.
Yeah. Trying to rearrange their letters.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you both one more clue.
Okay.
And there's a hint. You could interpret Alex's buzzer as a hint for the connection.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's going to be something sexual to do with erections.
Maybe.
Because this is your quiz, Robin. The orchids is meant to be like a sexual, it's meant to represent a sexual, the female sexual organ. Does an avocado do that too?
In the right
direction. Does an avocado do that too?
Shall I give you the answer, or Alex, are you?
Yeah, go for it. I have one more guess.
Yeah.
Are they both something to do with...
Something to do, doesn't cut it, mate.
Are they both used in the... as natural herbal remedies for erectile dysfunction?
No, but... I mean, you got the clue, but not what the answer is. What connects avocado and orchid is that their names are both derived from words for testicle.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh,
well, more you know.
Hmm. Which makes you wonder. I mean, have you seen natural avocados? Like real ones that aren't farmed?
No, I can't. I don't know.
In South America, they are huge. They are massive. They're like as big as melons.
Why
are they called testicles? I have no idea.
Why do they get smaller?
Something in the water.
Maybe it's to
down
do
there.
With the stone.
I think it's just to do with farming methods. And a lot of our avocado over here in Britain comes from Israel, where the conditions aren't quite so perfect for avocado growing.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's mad. Interesting, so, yeah. I wonder why they just only give us the... I guess don't want a giant avocado.
I'm not really much. Surprised though that they haven't found a way of selling them over here, because people would love that, wouldn't they?
Oh yeah, I would.
They'd go crazy.
Also, you get red avocado in places like, I think it's Costa Rica and stuff like that.
Game changer.
Which, yeah, I can't, like, what?
Yeah.
Anyway, so
it wasn't anything to do with erections.
It wasn't to do with erections. I was trying to go for the penis clue, but yeah, whatever. Yeah. Question 7, still 3-2, I think. What were the bones of contention during the Bone Wars?
What? The bones of contention during the Bone Wars.
They're multiple, I take it.
Oh, well, let's give you a clue. It's one thing, but the Bone Wars took place in the 19th century in America.
Yeah. 19th century America. Okay. Loads of Americans at home going, they've learned this in history. Going,
yeah,
how do you not know this?
About.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. The Bone Wars. Ooh, I'm sorry. Right, go for it.
Are they the bones of Native American leaders? That kind of thing?
No.
Okay.
Martin, take a guess.
It's quite literal, isn't it? That sounds very
literal. He's not wrong there.
Oh, that's Martin a clue now. So, really.
So, when I said bones of contention, I was literally saying, what were the bones?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. What's up, I'm going to go for the bones of the founding fathers.
No, although that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Where are they buried?
Don't
know. Anyone know that? Let us know.
Yeah, no,
I'm interested.
Must be a few in Philadelphia.
You'd expect so.
So were they after the bones, or is it just like where there was loads of bones?
People were fighting over bones.
Okay. Could we both go? Do you go next?
Not necessarily
a
war in the literal sense.
Okay.
Dinosaur bones?
Oh, spot on.
What?
Dinosaur fossils. What? Yep.
Oh.
So there's a good story there behind it. Go look it up. So 4-2 to Martin. Question number 8.
Okay, I can still come back.
Who has lost her head 3 times, lost her arm once, has been covered in paint over 7 times, and was once blown off her pedestal?
Ooh, you're hard. Show it.
Is it Mona Lisa?
No.
Oh.
But you're right in...
A painting, isn't it?
Well,
we've
had paint thrown over her 7 times.
Lady Jane Grey.
No.
Hmm.
Just
thinking. It's not a painting, but it is a work of art.
Head blown... Oh, okay.
A sculpture, then.
Yes. Mm. Head blown off.
What's a good sculpture?
Oh,
if you get this, I'm gonna be so busy.
Margaret Thatcher.
No, but so many people would have wished to have done that to her.
Paint.
I
was thinking about
I don't even.
I hate towards
her. And it's a her.
It's a her.
It's a her.
It's a her.
I'll statue. Give you a clue. It's in Europe.
Okay.
Northern Europe.
Ah. Okay, I've had my go, but I'll leave it. I've got something in mind.
I don't know any statues. I don't know.
Would they have a statue of her? Maybe not.
Not necessarily a historical person.
I'm just going to say, is it a statue of Venus?
No. But Aphrodite. You're in the right arena.
I'm obviously going to go for that.
Okay, I'll give you one more clue.
Yep.
It is a popular fictional character that lots of children will watch and sing along to.
Could it be Mary Poppins?
No.
Oh, that's a good guess, though. That's a good, really good guess.
Sing along to, I was thinking. Hmm.
Sing along to.
Spoon. That's
a tricky clue, I admit, but it's not invalid.
But I'm also in the right area with Venus in Europe, Northern Europe. Oh, I don't know, Robin. I don't know.
No,
this quiz is
just one guess. Oh, sorry, this quiz has turned out to be quite challenging. Hasn't it?
Quiz isn't is the right questions aren't coming up. I really don't know. Yeah, I can't even hazard a guess.
Okay, the answer is Copenhagen's Little Mermaid statue.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, the statue was put up a long time ago.
Yeah.
After the Hans Christian Andersen story.
Mm, right. Interesting. No, so I wouldn't have ever got that unless I've been to Copenhagen.
Question nine. It is 4-2 to Martin.
I can still.
You can still get this. Yeah. You can still get this. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
It's true. Which two countries in Africa? Sorry. Let's do that again. Which two rivers give their names to two African countries?
I've got one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go for... Actually, I might say that one second, because if I get the first one wrong, I'm going to have them on the bank. Is one of them the Congo?
Yes.
And the other one Niger?
Yes, or the Niger. Well done.
I wasn't sure about Congo, so I wanted to keep the one in.
Yeah. Boy, well done, sir. 5-2.
I don't... You know your rivers.
I was surprised that they're both right.
Question number 10, similarly on a kind of nautical theme or water theme. where is the Maritime Mercantile City a World Heritage Site?
Portsmouth?
No. But you've got the right idea.
What was the question?
The Maritime Mercantile City is a World Heritage Site where?
London?
Nope.
No.
It's it is a city in Britain.
Hmm.
That you may have been to. I've been to it.
Robin, have you been to Southampton?
No.
You haven't been to Southampton?
I may I answer your question with another question?
Yeah. Not answering the question, but what is your favourite, you know, coastal city in Britain? I'm just interested. I'm just fascinated, really, that you've been to.
Yeah. I can't
say. I'm related.
Skegness.
City.
City, yeah.
Oh, blimey, because that's more tough. My little coastal towns, but how many cities?
Mm.
Which ones are there? There's Liverpool. There's Cardiff.
Mm.
Norwich. Is that near? It's near the coast.
Yeah, near the coast.
Is it Cardiff?
No.
I thought Cardiff was in the middle of the country.
No. It's on the coast.
Oh, did not know that.
Yeah, and Cardiff Bay.
Huh.
Mm.
Bay Area.
Well,
I don't know. What's the answer?
I'm amused you went for Cardiff because the answer is Liverpool.
Ah, no way.
You went for the one. Yep. So I think that final score is 5-2.
Yeah, all right.
To Martin. Hooray. But, you know, that's a total
and
of
still
7 points awarded out of 10. So come on, guys. That's pretty bad.
There's only three we didn't get.
I'm sorry, there were some tough questions. Though.
I'd say the little mermaid question, that's tough. That's a tough question.
Yeah.
What was some of the early ones? There was like a very specific answer we had to get. I think it was question one. What was question one?
There was the orchid.
London.
The orchid one.
Yeah, that's quite tough. Maybe that's what three.
And the river, the rivers one was pretty tough.
You did but, well, you know, there, just, yeah, yeah.
Just bordering on genius. So.
Yeah. Don't the bonus question.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I've got to switch on your, some kind of dignity.
Switch
here.
On your childhood minds here a bit.
So it's never been turned off.
Things you loved when we were kids, or of that age.
Okay.
What connects Mildred Hubble, Willow Rosenberg, Samantha Stevens, and Sabrina Spellman?
They're all magical characters.
Oh, so
TV.
Close, so close.
Not witches.
They are witches. Yeah. They're all fictional witches.
Oh, okay.
Witches.
So we can just have three yeses now.
where was the third guess?
Anything to
they're all magical
the
characters in TV. Oh, they're all witches.
No, magical characters in TV was one.
That's one, yeah.
Okay, fine. Okay, fine. You had a second guess then.
I don't think that was unreasonable.
Give me the TV shows. Mildred Hubble.
The worst witch.
Yes.
I don't know. Sabrina Spellman was the only one.
Yeah, Sabrina, teenage witch.
Yeah.
Willow Rosenberg.
I don't know.
Is that Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Yeah, it's Buffy the Vampire
Willow,
Slayer.
Yeah, of course.
And Samantha Stevens. To be honest, I didn't.
Samantha Stevens. Did I? Yeah.
It's also the name of an Irish pop group from the late 90s.
What, Samantha Stevens?
No, the name of the show. Name of the show.
Oh. Don't know.
C'est la vie.
C'est la vie. Never saw that show.
Bewitched.
Bewitched.
Oh, Bewitched.
Do you remember the band? Everyone remembers the band.
Oh, Bewitched, yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I see.
Anyway. So, well done. Alex is the loser again. Martin is the victor again. And it's as if nothing ever changed from last year. And
why? What's happened?
Alex
I was on such a good run.
Such an incredible run. What was it? Like 4 straight months of undefeated.
It was ridiculous.
That was crazy.
Okay.
Crazy.
Well, next week, I think I'll be doing the quiz.
Oh.
I should be. So I'm going to have a break from this losing streak and it should... I'll come back with a fresh new game, fresh tactics. It's going to be good.
But thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. Please let us know your thoughts on the stories we told and your answers to the quiz in the comments below on YouTube or on our Twitter feed or by email at altoconspiracies@gmail.com. Thank you to all our Patreon supporters who will get a Patreon exclusive podcast going up on Patreon after this.
Yes.
And we'll see you all next week.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.